could be a thing.
Hey, so the Mister in Mister Arash, that's lowercase, right?
Yeah, sure.
I could have sworn that I saw. That's how I saw it.
I mean, Twitter handle. Yeah, you're right. I want to say I started typing it with like the M R in lowercase in parentheses.
That's the way it should be.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's the way it is.
That's the most tagged.
Yeah. Well, you can't. Well, I mean, you can't tag the parentheses. First, hashtags are not case sensitive, nor can you have the parentheses in them.
That's true, and that's probably for the best.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah, but for the most part, I mean, it's not like a very good name, to be honest. Because like when you Google it, 1,000 different Mr. Arashes come up.
Is there a period in the Mr. Arash? Not really.
It's technically supposed to be written as Mr. in parentheses Arash.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
But then some places have put the period. But the thing is, Arash is a super, super common Iranian name.
Okay.
And so, they're, like, if you Google Mr. Arash, like, if you come up, listeners, if you are looking for a good artist name to come up with something that when you Google it, only you come up, not 3,000 other names.
Yeah.
So, because, like, with Mr. Arash, 3,000 other names come up.
You guys interviewed Mondo the DJ, right?
Mondo?
No, I don't think so.
But you know him.
Yeah,
that's why he's Mondo the DJ, because DJ Mondo is a million people.
That works. Yeah.
Same thing. And it's funny how you were saying some of them work. So Mr. Sham, right, for the other guy in West Coast Avengers, it's MRSHAM. We have a friend who makes fun of him and calls him Mrs. Ham, because it looks like Mrs. Ham.
Mine comes up as Marsh a little bit. But there's a lot of Arashes. If I could go back and do it again, it wouldn't be Mr. Arash.
Do you want to do an opening?
Do it for this?
Yeah, just do an opening so I can just cut it and I'll put it at.
Do you want me to do it right now?
Yeah, just
like go through all the.
No. On this one, you're not going to do that. It's just brought to you by Stay Illuminated.
Oh, okay.
This is a special episode.
Okay.
All right.
This is brought to you by the new shiny jeans?
Oh, yeah. Well, then technically, I guess this makes it our opening rant before I say don't flush the toilet. You are now tuned in to the Crappy Awesome Podcast. And welcome to another stupendous episode of the Crappy Awesome Podcast. We are your hosts. Wait, are we your hosts? Normally we'd say we're the hosts. No, today we are not the hosts. I am not your host, Mr. Arash, even though nobody calls me Mr., even though people still don't call me Mr. And with me might be Kill C. Ray, even though he's not the host. He's not the host.
Hey, yo!
Out of the background. Our very special host today is on the other mic right now. This is where you say something.
Okay. This is Tangent the Wiggy Woo from the West Coast Avengers crew, and you are listening to PlatformCollection.com's Crappy Awesome. Be sure to check out the other podcast, Really Though, with...
You're going to go through this?
I'd practice. Yes.
I know. I'm waiting. Go. Go.
What is it? Be sure to check out Really Though with Cookbook. Be sure to check out Stereotypes with Cookbook. Be sure to check out Cookbook's other four podcasts that are coming out on platformcollection.com. Also, check out TumexHologram.com. It's a 24-hour radio station that they're always doing something crazy on. You got The Up. You got Into the Wild. You got all the podcasts, Orchestrated Radio with Noah James. You guys don't run Master of the Universe. No, we're editing. What was it? You guys got.
I'm certain, by the way, Chris is going to put all this up without editing it. This is way too entertaining.
Oh, man. Be sure to check out all
I don't do this without notes. You're trying to do this without notes.
I have notes.
You have notes for all the different podcasts that are on the show, on the network?
Oh, no, not for that. But I've listened to you guys so much that I was 68% sure that I was able to run through it.
Well, you got Cookbook. He'll be happy to hear that.
Well, I know that some are on sabbatical. Like, you know, there's Spock's and Spock podcast, which hasn't had episodes
Culture
in a while.
Sessions.
Culture Sessions with Spock and why can I not think of any of these dudes' names right now? And
Spock Beats produces an archive.
I cannot think of the name archive right now. Wow. Okay.
See, again, that's why I have notes.
Okay,
Chris makes fun of me for having notes for this opening part, but it's because I kind of let my brain shut down because it's just like an autopilot mode.
Right.
By the way, this is our cat Ralphie meowing at you.
I'm going to get this so perfect on the Chris episode.
Yeah.
I'm not going to let this happen again.
Is this different episodes that we're recording?
Oh, crap. I don't know.
I think he's editing them together. I think it's one episode.
Okay.
It's okay. It's okay. For the whole thing.
Oh, it's going to be one opening.
This whole train wreck is going to be the opening for the whole thing. Don't worry about it. It's okay. How about this? I'll just tell this. It's Life on the Road with 60 East. Really, though, with Cookbook. Noah James and Lisa J host Orchestrated. There's Proof for Life Radio and Status Escalate with Kali. That's right. I like that echo.
Yeah.
Kali's also doing Bars Weekly streaming radio show. You got to make sure to check that out. The Ghetto Blaster podcast hosted by Ricochet. Pretty fresh. Hosted by Muds One. I like to take a little pause after that.
The Mighty Muds Hour, right?
Yes, yeah, that's yes. There's tons of shows.
Yeah, the Mighty Muds Hour with Muds One and Mad Max.
Right, and we have let's see here, Tumex Hologram Podcast. Of course, you mentioned that earlier. Just Tumex Hologram Radio.
.com.
Shout out to our sponsors, Stay Illuminated, for all your fresh gear and lifestyle needs. Visit stayilluminated.com, and make sure you use the code CRAPPYAWESOME for free shipping on any order. And also shout out to our creative partners, watertoplants.org. They're a music incubator in LA. Learn lots more about them at their website, watertoplants.org. Follow us on Instagram and on Twitter. On Instagram, we are Platform Collection. That is one word all spelled out. And on Twitter, at Platform Collect with no shun. And this is the part also that I mentioned Burner Podcast and I host that shit. But yeah, of course, back to you.
Of course.
Woo-dee-woo.
So, everybody hears Arash and Kiel C. Ray interviewing all the luminaries of, frankly, a big chunk of the world now in the southwestern section of America, in SoCal, but even beyond.
That's a lot of words.
And a lot of people are really curious about the kind of things that they think. And I know that I'm a big fan of this podcast and a lot of the podcasts on platformcollection.com. And you guys are constantly in my head. You guys are constantly my commute buddies. And so I was really honored for the chance to interview you guys and go deeper into some stuff. And to go deeper into your guys' body of work, which is a pretty wild ride and an interesting journey that I'm going to have to hear from both of you guys later today.
But and you're without a doubt, like, you are absolutely been one of our favorite people that we've experienced on this amazing journey. Of awesome personality, really positive, intelligent, amazing. And I'm always curious to see what you're working on next. So this is going to be a lot of fun.
Thank you so much, man. I appreciate that. What was it? So one of the things that I got really into was the Burner Podcast, as you know, but maybe we can go into some kind of bigger things that I hear you say a lot that I kind of think about sometimes that I think are really insightful things. I hear you and Chris both often talk about this, but I hear you say a lot like, it's sad when people look at experiences in life like they wasted years, because time isn't really wasted. You probably learned something from that, you know?
Yeah.
And I was just wondering, like, why is that such a big theme in your, and even just in your language about life? And I guess if I had to guess, I would say it looks like you're the kind of person who, you know, you invest whole hog into things, you know, like you'll really put your all into something. And it sounds like you've gone through a lot of things in life, personal, professional, and artistic, where you invested a lot into it and went through a whole journey and actually it finished journeys, you know, and had retrospect on it. So I was wondering if you had thoughts on that.
Right. Yeah. This is a thought that I've had more recently a bunch of times, and it's been hitting me. I don't know what it is about my personality, about my, I don't know, genetic makeup, the wiring of my brain, whatever the fuck it is. Whatever experience I've had really, really fully. Whatever trauma I've had, it's been really, really fully traumatic experiences. When I went through experiences or periods of time in my younger days where I was a confused young man, let's say, for example, in my early 20s, and not really understanding how to interact with women, how to interact with the world. Like, I went through that all the way in the deep end. Like, it wasn't that I was just a little bit insecure. It was crushing insecurity. When I had depression, it wasn't that I was just like a little sad. It was serious depression. Like, everything has been full force. So when I interact with people and when I interview people, when I'm creating art, working with people, what I keep experiencing is that it's very seamless for me to be able to channel whatever energy and experience it is that they're going through. So even if it's somebody that is not someone that we'd have in our social circles, because let's say they're still finding themselves.
Sure.
Maybe they're still focusing on negative things, or maybe they're more homophobic or angry at the world. I mean, a variety of things, but I don't know. Maybe it's these days it's become very popular to say I'm an empath. Like, maybe it's that, but that's something that Chris and I have had some conversations about. And I mean, I'm certain he can speak on his own experience on it. But when I look back on my life, every experience I've had, I fully dived into. And so now when I talk to people who seemingly come from very different walks of life, it's really easy for me to bridge a psychic connection with that person and really be able to understand and hear where they're coming from. And that's what leads to being able to create whatever art it is that I happen to be creating in that moment. And I hope that sheds some light on sort of what you're asking. Is that that's the thing. I've had these experiences and none of them have been wasted time. They've all added to the person that I've become today and everything that I'm working on today. And I can constantly see all these links of like, I'm here, I'm doing this thing. My life is fucking beautiful right now. I have all these connections, these amazing experiences. And I can look back on my life and see all the pathways that connected to each other to lead to me ending up where I was.
That's I call that Grant Morrison's centipede. Grant Morrison's a comic book writer who made the Invisibles, and he's also done a lot of Superman and X-Men and stuff. And he's like a countercultural chaos magician, and he talks in the comic book The Invisibles. He talks about your actual body is the trail that is made from like the moment you're born until you die, and that so that's it looks like a big crazy swirling centipede that goes all over the world, you know, assuming you travel, you know, and that's your real body, you know, and you don't see the artistic design that your body makes until the end. And so when people talk about that, what you just described, how you could, it seemed to me like you were talking about you kind of visualizing the lines of your journey, and I always think that, you know, and I was going to ask you about that specifically. So that kind of answers it for me.
No, I see every link. I was reading there was a little bit in Psychology Today, like a few years ago that I read, or saying like one of the correlations they found with the happiest people in the world is that they look back on their lives and they see a pattern or a reason that things have happened. Again, I don't know where it came from with me. I'd love to be able to point it out. But when I look back on my life, I can see it. I can see where the links are. I can see, oh, I fell fucking flat on my face, and if I hadn't, I wouldn't have gone through this thing, and then this thing wouldn't have happened, and I wouldn't be end up here. You know, all of it.
So when did you first get into photography?
I've always found visual art interesting, but I don't think I was interested in actually being a photographer. It was filmmaking that interested me first. And I can tell you, like, specifically, it was the movie Bad Boys. Made me want to make movies.
Yeah.
You know, Martin Lawrence, Will Smith. And that was sort of my dream, and it was always in the background. And at that time, I was drawing a lot more, like, comic book type stuff. And, you know, I thought I still wanted to be a comic book artist. And in college, I was an art major with emphasis in multimedia. And the only reason I switched to multimedia was because with graphic design, I had to take two more classes and I'd have to do a portfolio and I didn't want to work more. So I switched to multimedia, which was easier. And in multimedia, I got to take a couple more photography classes. And then after that is when I got involved with Proof of Life. And that's when we started doing music videos. But music videos take some setup and editing and all this kind of stuff.
Right.
So during that time period, I was also doing some photography so that I could continue creating visually without having to do all the setup for a music video. But one thing led to another, and I just kind of kept shooting and kept shooting and kept shooting. And then ended up becoming my day job, because I happened to be at the right place at the right time with public agency that I was working for at that time doing graphic design.
Okay.
And before I know it, it's paying my rent. And it's become a major part of my identity. And you know, and I always say, like, artists usually don't want to do just one thing. Like, I've never met an artist that wants to do just one thing.
Right.
We end up getting labeled the thing that pays our rent.
Yeah.
And somehow I got labeled a photographer because it started paying my rent.
Right.
Dang,
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to pigeonhole you, man.
No. it is incredible now. I fucking love it. The more I got into it, the easier it got for me. Like, the more I figured out what my photographic voice was, the more fun it got. So, like, now I don't have to think about it. It's just muscle memory. But yeah, it's become absolutely rewarding, and to be recognized for my photography by people is like, it's still weird because I never set out on this path.
I've noticed, like you said, you make things beautiful, you know, and I totally agree with that. Like, photographers have different kind of filters. Like, there are photographers who find like the beautiful ugly, and photographers who find the gritty, and who find the great black and white. But it's like, your stuff really does bring out a profound beauty, and it's pretty remarkable.
Pretty is the word that I it's really pretty.
Yeah. And actually, it's like, I'm going to save, there's an idea I have about it, but I want to talk to both of you about it, since you guys both have a different visual style that I think about a lot. But I was thinking about, you know, Burner Podcast, and really how do I put this? You know, I've told you, you helped me with my, you know, recent ambivalence about counterculture, and I told you a lot about that. And I was wondering where you are about counterculture, and where you see the larger movement of alternative lifestyles and organicism, and just all the kind of, you know, artistic lives, and the kind of thing that you see. Like, what are some of the bigger ideas that you're marinating on lately that are occupying a lot of your mental space? And then just when you think about that in general and big think, you know?
Right. So, I mean, you know, on I talk a lot about the Burning Man community, but really that's what it is. You're right. It's counterculture.
That's how I think of it.
Right. No, you're right. Because, you know, in my social circles, we'll say burners.
Sure.
But really, Burning Man is simply an umbrella for a lot of different counterculture movements.
Yeah.
It's just that they're the ones that go to Burning Man have generally agreed that we're going to support each other. We're not going to fuck with each other. And you know, I always tell people, like, when you try to figure out, like, there's no like profile of a burner. There's so many different kinds. There's it could be your yoga instructor, it could be your doctor, it could be your lawyer, it could be the artist down the street, it could be a musician. There is no specific type. Really, the only thing that everybody's agreed on is there's no age limit on play. And I just, even you asking this question is making me think about that. I guess that's really what it comes to with counterculture, is that we're looking at reality, we're looking at life, and we've decided there's no age limit on play. We're going to keep playing.
There's no age limit on play. That's fantastic.
We're going to keep playing. And the thing is, your play could be, you want to play with art, you want to play with building things, you want to play sexually, you want to go visit the orgy dome, you know, like whatever your play is that you're interested in. We've agreed that there's no age limit on that. And with counterculture, I think what you're looking at is the... And I use the word counterculture and burner interchangeably.
Sure.
In this, we're at the cutting edge of what's next.
Yeah.
We're at the cutting edge on technology, on art. We're at the cutting edge of relationships, how to love. I for lack of a better description, practiced ethical consensual non-monogamy is the correct phrasing, but what most people call it, polyamory, but that's you know, that's where my life is.
Sure.
But the idea is that, you know, we have a lot of people that are constantly playing and experimenting with different ways to be. And so the counterculture is always like that tiny percentage of people that are at the cutting edge of what's next.
Yeah.
And an example of that is like fashion. Or music, or actually any of these things. But like fashion, for example, you ever see The Devil Wears Prada?
Yes.
So there's a scene in that where like the Meryl Streep character is scolding Anne Hathaway, and she's saying, oh, you think you're wearing blue blouse.
It's the best scene in the movie, probably.
It's the best. Yeah. It's saying, oh, you're wearing a blue blouse. Well, that color blue, what you don't know, is originated 3 years ago at a boutique fashion show in Milan. And like, she breaks down all the different ways that the blue started at this couture fashion show and ended up at the Marshall's clearance section, where she bought her blue blouse.
Yeah.
And so what I experienced, like when I go to Burning Man, and Burning Man is basically, like Burning Man... I like that you're using it with counterculture. Burning Man is basically the comic convention of counterculture.
Right.
That's where all the fucking weirdos are coming together to show off all their weirdest shit.
Yeah.
So what you're seeing out there is like weird DJ who's experimenting with four different decks and putting together a whole different kind of sound and experimenting with weird noises and recordings. He's the couture. That eventually leaks down into somebody hearing that, taking it into a club. Then somebody hears that and buys the CD, the MP3. Eventually, those sounds that they're experimenting with out there at the weird event in the middle of the desert ends up in the top 40 song that we're hearing on the radio.
Yeah.
And so that's what I mean by like counterculture being on the cutting edge. Like, yeah. I want to see what's next. And what you're seeing when at the counterculture Burning Man, or I'm sorry, comic convention, which is Burning Man.
Yeah.
That's where you're seeing all the weirdos get together to show the weirdest shit that in a few years are going to end up as part of the mainstream. Even with like the way people love. I'm seeing one, I can tell you like on dating apps.
Yeah.
I am seeing more than ever people discussing that they have open relationships. Girls marking that they're bisexual. I see a lot more girls doing it than guys.
Yeah.
But the idea of let's see if there's different ways to do monogamy.
Yeah.
It has now made its way into the mainstream.
Yeah.
It's not quite fully like full on polyamory yet.
Yeah.
But like open relationships have become way more common. People are way more open about them in 2017.
Yeah.
And that's been something that they've been doing in counterculture forever.
Right.
You know, but they've been experimenting and now it's made its way. Now it's made it to the Marshall's curling section.
I think that's a great analogy. To me, it's really interesting even that you think of it as a small chunk of people because I often wonder that. Mm-hmm. I often wonder if it's not just under half of people.
Are in counterculture?
Or on some level, you know, or that are, but I mean, I think it just depends on how we want to draw what Venn diagram, you know, like.
Why don't we say counterculture is, I agree that it's even more than half probably.
In a way, huh?
Yeah, I would probably define those people, the ones that I'm saying is in that small percentage, are the ones that have come out. Well, they've come out. They are open about their counterculture-ness.
Right.
Rather than just like having thoughts in their head about like feeling, for example, polyamory. Like I have a friend of mine pointed out to me that way. She considers polyamory to be more, what's the word? An orientation.
Yeah.
Like a sexual orientation.
Yeah.
Like some people are monogamous, some people are polyamorous. There's probably a lot more people who are polyamorous than are willing to admit out loud.
Yeah.
In fact, there's like a joke in polyamory world where they'll say pretty much everybody's poly, it's just most people are lying about it.
I was thinking the other day, if everything is a spectrum now, and I generally agree with this idea, mm-hmm. I guess that means everyone's somewhere on the spectrum of everything.
Absolutely.
You know, and so
we're all technically
on a lot of the poly.
Yeah. Like we're all on some kind of spectrum.
Sure.
But the polyamory thing, for example, if you're a single person who's dating multiple people, you're basically practicing some level of polyamory.
That is correct.
It's just that like everybody's...
Now you have a vocabulary for it.
Right. It's just everybody's kind of lying to each other about it though. Like you're supposed to kind of pretend like you're not seeing anybody else.
Oh, he was talking to me. I didn't know he was also talking to her.
Well, or people will date and they'll just assume, like the assumption is that you're fucking other people until you have a conversation about the fact that you're not fucking other people. Right? And like... There's like this language. Like if you're a single person and like let's say somebody asks you out for Friday night, you have a date Friday night. You don't say you have a date Friday night. You just say, oh, I can't Friday. I have plans. But with ethical consensual non-monogamy, for example, or you know the preface to polyamory, you would say point blank, I have a date Friday night. How about Saturday? That's sort of the difference that you see in mainstream world and like a lot of the default world. Like they're doing it. We're just not saying it out loud. Silly.
And so are these the relationship and the sexual and the romantic ones? It sounds like the ones you're excited about lately. Mm. But no, I'm just objectively trying to ask, like, what other, give me one or two more before we go from this topic of, like, just the things you're excited about in counterculture shit that you're just like, this is why I do this podcast, so I can show people stuff like this, and they don't even know it's coming, and it's going to blow their minds.
Right,
you know?
Right. Plant medicine, for sure. The healing properties of psychedelics.
Yeah.
Huge.
Yeah.
It's huge.
Absolutely.
There's it's every time we bring up DMT on this show, we laugh that Cookbook is getting pissed. He's like, can you guys go one fucking show without talking about DMT? but there was DMT. There's my life before and after DMT.
Yeah.
The healing properties of plant medicine, visionary plant medicine. That's a huge chunk of the change that you see in me and being like an unhappier person versus who I am today.
You know what's funny, man? Actually, now I'm grooving into this. What was it? I enjoy that Moody Arash in those old videos too. I like him too. I relate to him too. And I relate to the journey, of having been moodier before and being more happy now. I feel like I used to think of my life as a novel and I kept waiting for the good parts. And like now that life is good, it's like... It's not even like a story. It's just like shit is dope, and I'm so grateful to be like so blessed all the time, you know. And so I kind of see, how do I put it? I don't know. I take a lot of interest and even a little bit of guidance from how you are about stuff, because I feel like you're better about letting stuff go than I am. And so I like that you're always encouraging that in your messages and stuff. But
I'm glad.
What was it? What were we? We were just talking.
You're asking
about
me for another example of something else I'm excited about.
In counterculture. Mm-hmm. Honestly, no, I'm down to pivot to kind of your videos and stuff.
Sure.
Because that stuff was really interesting. Today I watched the Mexico one where you went to a gig in Mexico, and then there was a Dutch DJ.
Needed 2001.
He goes
by 2001.
Dutch DJ 2001 who needed to get to San Diego for a gig.
Yeah.
And you guys helped smuggle him across the border.
He came legally. It was just, like a smuggle. Yeah, you're right. Kind of a smuggle.
What do you mean?
Well, okay, so for...
If it's okay.
No, of course. Yeah. For listeners who are not aware, if you've ever been to the Tijuana border, it is a nightmare getting through. It is a nightmare. And it's because it's this massive line.
So the smuggling was just to circumvent the crazy process.
Right. He had his passport.
It was just about the process.
Right.
Okay, I was very confused. I was like, why are Tea Partiers making this viral? You know, like when I was watching it. Because
the Dutch have snuck in DJ.
It was still rather instructive, though, or it was still pretty informative. Yeah. If people are listening want to check it out, it's at MRARASH.com.
Yeah, that's right.
Right, and you go to his filmmaker work, and there's one of the three extended films there, and the one in the middle is 48 Hours in SoCal.
Yes,
right.
Yeah,
48 Hours in SoCal, and it's just 28 minutes, and so it was it was actually a very quick watch. But what I got out of it was, I remember I wanted to ask you about this. What I got out of it also was like the frenetic pace of your life in that moment, and how cool it is to have that portrait of that, you know, and how it's like, we did that, and then we came back, and then we had this show with Kayla Carrera and me and Chris and
George from Cypher Effect.
And another girl I'm not familiar with. And either way, it was just showing this frenetic pace. And it's like, is life still like that? Is it better that it's not that packed, jam-packed anymore? Because I know that's the dream that a lot of us have sometimes is that our artistic life will be like that. And also how we idealize our youth.
That whole thing started because I went down. I was collecting some promo footage because I was going to help my buddy Ali Ganavi. He's a DJ in LA. I was going to do like a promo for their label called Saturday Night Sessions. And I just happened to be recording our drive down. And then when we got down there, I just kept recording. And like he did his gig. And then there was these other DJs from different parts of the country and world that had their gigs there. This is all in Ensenada. And then we came back again. I just kept filming, just kind of by accident. And then we crossed the border and had our little adventure. And we had to get this Dutch DJ to the U.S. because he had a gig like that next night. Because it's a common tour thing. Like we know you're in this region in the world, so we can pay you a little bit less to cross the border and do another gig.
Right.
So he had a gig in downtown San Diego. So then Ali also had a gig in downtown San Diego. So we going through this adventure, getting across the border, and then I ran to both of their gigs to film them doing their respective shows in different clubs in downtown.
Yeah.
And then the next morning had to wake up and drive to LA to record Crappy Awesome.
Wow.
And it was a crazy 48 hours, and they're not all like that. but by coincidence, I kept recording, and I was like, there's a story here, and we ended up never actually doing a promo video. But it was. I don't know if I necessarily want that to be every weekend.
Right.
It's definitely exhausting.
Right. But it seems like you still have a nice balance of life being varied with cool artistic events like that all the time.
Yeah.
Or often.
Yeah. It's before we got here to record this interview, I can't really talk about a lot of the details yet. But I'm launching a new project. And this new project, I basically had a brunch meeting with a team of 10 people right before I got here. And these people were all selected because over the past few years, they've been reaching out to be individually, independently of each other, and we've had having conversations, and it's not rare for me to have like somebody message me and say like, dude, you're just constantly working on cool shit. How can I come and work on cool shit with you?
Right.
And I've been looking for a way to make that happen. So this project is something that I've dreamed up, and now we're gonna work on that.
Okay.
But yeah, that's 10 people right there who are basically asking that same question. Who finally I was ready to pull the trigger on and say, all right, you want to get to work? Let's fucking get to work. Here it is.
Okay.
Here's a project. I can't wait to tell you guys about it, but I can't talk about it yet.
So, but I also heard you said there were two things you're launching. So there's one you can talk about or no?
No, I think Chris said that earlier. I think he was referencing the Burner Podcast thing.
Okay.
Because Burner Podcast is the show that I host.
Right.
And then I also...
Alchemy.
Right, and we started Alkaline is the name of it.
Oh, shit.
Right. Alchemy's good, though. We should use... Actually, Alchemy...
That's the Alchemy is the Sorrel Bistro series that Abstract Rude and do in Temecula. Yeah.
But...
You could probably link with him and make it or something.
Yeah, well, because it would be... I mean, Alchemy, they don't own the word Alchemy.
That's correct.
It might make a lot of sense.
They have a spin-off project called Alchemy?
Well, yeah, because the full name of the other podcast is Burner Podcast Presents Alkaline.
Okay.
But if there's also a Burner Podcast Presents Alchemy...
Ooh, that's a nice alliteration.
Okay, so Alkaline is DJ mixes.
Yeah.
By like episode 10 of Burner Podcast, I knew that I wanted to start another show that was all DJ mixes, that are DJs active in the Burner community.
Yeah.
But I didn't have the bandwidth. And so eventually Navjeet is a really good friend of mine. He came on, he started helping me with a lot of things. And we worked together to develop Burner Podcast Presents Alkaline, which is a spinoff of Burner Podcast. So that's the DJ show. The next spin-off, and there's another show out of the Bay Area, and the idea is that there's the Burner Podcast Network, so it's a bunch of different shows covering Burning Man. The next show that I want to start is a live music thing where we're sharing like live music from the Burner community.
Yeah.
So Alchemy would be a pretty good name for that.
Yeah, it would. And you know what? How do I put this? I really love that you did Alkaline, because even a little bit of music that I got exposed to through the Burner Podcast, I loved. Like, I was bumping that Hearts With No Name remix for like weeks after, and then it even led me to some other really cool remix. Like, it always takes me to this Papa Was a Rolling Stone dance mix too.
Dude, that's so funny. That's Hearts With No Name. That's by the band America,
right?
And it's a dance music remix of it.
Yep.
And the reason, so it's funny. I met somebody at, I think it was this year at the Burn. I forget, or maybe like right before the Burn. Anyway, this person who's a fan of the show was saying that like she didn't even know that original song. She just thought it was this electronic dance music track. And her mom was playing it, and she's like, oh my God, that's
what
the theme song of Burner Podcast.
To be that tripped out like that?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that is too funny. I love that in Burner Podcast, people getting weird doesn't go where 90% of podcasts go, where the hosts start to go like, whoa, we're getting into weird land. Yeah. You know, it's like, you know, like that totally, because I listen to a lot of podcasts, you know, everything from like, you know, countercultural folks like us to like the political centrist in Washington, D.C., you know, and I love that, like, that normal place that is kind of blocked off from other places because it's like podcasts want to talk about mainstream stuff, and more people listen. It's like, yours like, no, let's go deeper into that weird shit you just talked about, you know? That's great. And what was it? What is it about, or actually, is it still, do you think, how do I put this? Is San Diego forever for you, or how do you think about that? Or are you? I mean, I know you're just kind of open to the universe all the time, but where are your thoughts on that lately? Because
I want to stay in San Diego or not?
I mean, or even just like what does San Diego mean to you?
Growing up in San Diego, I was looking for any excuse to get the fuck out of here.
Sure.
Because my experience growing up in San Diego is that it's an extremely superficial city. People are really fucking pretty and in great shape, and it's hard to find people to have conversations like this with.
Okay.
And so we would visit other cities, like, you know, like I'd go to San Francisco and I'm like, oh wow, like overhear a conversation at a coffee shop and it's interesting and I want to join in that conversation. Whereas in San Diego, I hear conversations at coffee shops and I'm like, what the fuck are you guys talking about? Like, just talking about bullshit. So I kept looking for a way to get the fuck out of San Diego, and I just could not get out. Like, something kept keeping me here.
Okay.
And then I discovered the Burner community. And once I found Verner's, and we have like a really vibrant, amazing community in San Diego. It's there is something special here, and it's different.
Yeah, yeah.
And we've
this
had
is what I wanted.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, yeah. A lot of people, a lot of Verner's from different cities, different parts of the world, come to San Diego, and they tell us that they're like, we've been all over the world. There's something different here. It has a very warm, welcoming, inclusive atmosphere. You come in, and you're immediately going to have a fuck ton of friends. It might be because it's the San Diego's climate and energy is exactly the special spice that the Verner community needed.
Yeah.
It's really perfect here. It's really great. There's a lot of intelligent people, but they're also like extremely inclusive. So you can get weird with people and be up at 4 a.m. Discussing super weird shit.
Yeah.
And one thing I started to discover is that I'd go to parties here, Verner parties, and I'm like, I'm not the weird guy here. Like, no matter what I talk about, nobody, like, stops and goes, that what you're describing. Whoa, you guys are getting weird.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, we don't. It doesn't happen. Right. And that's what sucked me in. And so now, as I've become more established as an artist and I feel strong in who I am, my identity and my ambitions, my professional ambitions, ideally, I would like to stay in San Diego as my home base and travel for work but come back here.
Okay.
That's my ideal world.
Okay.
But Verner community in San Diego is fucking epic.
Right. I told you that I met some Vegas people at Rainbow who they were telling me that every 2 Sundays they have a playa gathering with, like, there's Rainbow people there and there's Burning Man people there and there's just club people there. Right. and it made me think of the stuff you've been telling me about. Yeah. About the regionals. And
they do it in the desert.
It's like a dry lake bed they have out there. Mm-hmm. And they do it every two weeks. All the countercultural people in the Vegas area you gather at that.
Yeah.
You know, and
that's super rad.
Are you involved in the, what is it, Utopia?
Yeah, Utopia, yeah. Utopia is the San Diego Regional Burn. That's something that's... I've had conversations with people who have been to multiple Burning Mans and don't know that there are regional burns.
Wow.
Which is mind-blowing to me.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's regional burns all over the world. San Diego's regional burn is Utopia. It's about 3,500 people. We don't actually burn anything because it's wildfire country.
Okay.
So there's fire, but not like big burn.
Burning a big totem, yeah.
Yeah. I'm involved with it as far as like when you're in San Diego, you're involved with it because it's your community. Like there's like the core base of people in San Diego who are the decision makers who are involved in different levels of Utopia. And I served as our curation lead 1 year. But after that year, I decided I want to keep all my focus on Verner Podcast and Burner Podcast is my gift to the community, so you know I feel pretty good about it. But every year, like I get involved, I work on an art project. I'm out there building, you know, ahead of time, but I'm not involved like on a leadership level at Utopia.
To kind of bridge all this back to kind of hip hop and platform collection stuff a little bit, do you think that there's a certain level of play with indie hip hop that there isn't in other music genres outside of? Outside of the stuff that you're into, or is it just it's a culture you happen to be into?
You mean with hip hop, or
earlier? I guess I should be explain. Earlier you were talking about there's no age limit to play,
right? Right,
and that seemed to be kind of a guiding idea for you,
right?
And so I was kind of thinking, you know, if there's symmetry in that, like from the Verner stuff to the hip hop stuff.
Yeah. I feel like in hip hop, we're still figuring that out a little bit more.
Okay.
Whereas, like, I want to say in Burner culture, like, it's already been agreed on. Like, it's been that way for a long time.
Right.
But also, hip-hop's a lot younger.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's a lot younger, and there's different events that have different, like, age groups.
Well, actually, it's probably around the same age as Burning Man. It might be a little older than Burning Man.
Right, but not counterculture.
Right.
Because, I mean, the people that went to Burning Man didn't, you know, they were always weird.
Yeah.
They just finally found a place to go.
Yeah. I mean, hip-hop had to have been a weird counterculture at some point.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's, I think hip-hop, I think it's still figuring that part out.
Yeah, I think I agree.
Because, I mean, that's one thing that's still interesting to us. Chris and I, when we're interviewing younger artists, and we ask them how they got into the scene, and they're like, my dad was into hip-hop.
Yeah.
That's still new. That more. That's still weird to me.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Oh, wow. Like, there's a new generation of people whose parents were into hip-hop. And it's not because they were, like, young parents. Like, it's, that's normal. There's probably a little bit less room for play in hip hop because it is a little bit more industry driven. Okay. And at the end of the day, it is, there are for-profit ventures that you, I mean, ultimately that's what you're aiming for. You're trying to make it a business.
Yeah.
So I feel like there's a little, not to say that you can't play, yeah, but it does feel like there's a little bit less.
Right.
Because it, I guess it's like a little, it's less likely that you'll see somebody in their 60s, you know, show up to like, you know, do graph like on the side of the freeway somewhere with like a crew of people, you know?
Yeah.
It's not to say that it wouldn't be welcome. It just,
right,
it's just, I feel like it wouldn't be as comfortable.
It tends to correlate with youthful energy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Whereas like, you know, you go to a counterculture gathering, there's, mm-hmm, there's going to be 70-year-olds and there's going to be 25-year-olds.
Right.
There's no age limit to that. Whereas in hip hop, there is still, on some level, there is that looming shadow of the label world and how we can market you and how we can sell you and all that. And in counterculture, it's not like we're selling anything. We're just gathering.
Mm. I love your unrelenting optimism about counterculture. And like I said, it kind of saved me a little bit this last summer, because I had all these issues with Rainbow that I didn't when I was younger. And I think I told you this, that it's like, it seems so interesting that Burning Man has so many built-in safeguards to so many of the things that I found objectionable, from the cultural appropriation to the consent stuff, like that there's so much more of an explicit culture with Burning Man of like how to do things right and keep it organized. And
can I say, by the way, like where you're, there are a lot of people who are disgusted by that, by the way.
Go on.
Because there's like a lot of super old school burners who think it is not honoring counterculture to set rules and safeguards.
Oh, that's a thing. Yeah, yeah. I've seen that. I see that discussion sometimes. Yeah.
Like you can't, like they're arguing, you can't say that you are, and I mean, I don't know if anarchist might be a strong word, but like you can't say that you're all about whatever goes and then set rules and limitations on it. Which, I mean, I disagree with. But I mean, that's why I'm there. I think there should be some limitations. And I think it's silly to assume people can just be left their own devices completely and figure it out. I think like, cause that's like a very kind of libertarian, I guess, thought process.
Yeah.
Which what I keep discovering with libertarians is that they're just absolutely some of the most intelligent, brilliant people on the planet. Most intelligent people I meet like would be like libertarian leaning.
Sure.
But I think they're unrealistic, or perhaps they're too optimistic about human nature.
I fully agree. What I always tell it to be in a strictly political sense, libertarian, I tell them like, okay, that's great, but the federal government liberated, you know, black people from the South, you know, like that's why there's a big government. Like you can make that argument for me about of the libertarian small government, you know, when
if you left it to people, it would have just you know been like saying? More of a massacre.
Like if you can guarantee to me that, you know, conservative parents aren't going to be whacked to their gay kids, like until you can guarantee me to that, it's like, I can't. Yeah. So I have the same thought.
I wonder if, you know, somebody else's argument to that might be that if you go back further and the government wasn't involved to begin with, we wouldn't have had slavery and oppression to begin with.
Right.
You know, so just to give like safe, protect both sides arguments.
Right.
But yeah, you know, I don't know if there's one that's right or wrong. I know what I agree with.
Right. Well, to bring it back to Burning Man and counterculture, talking about that.
Right.
And, I think it's interesting. It's even just interesting and beautiful for me to observe how Burning Man progresses those debates, because it doesn't ignore those older perspectives, but it also takes into account new sensitivities to new marginalized groups. And I really admire that you preach that gospel, man. You know, honestly, in that sense, I find you to be, at least from what I hear you, I mean, all I can really assess you from is the content that you put out. You know, I listen to you on podcasts and see stuff you put out, so I can't feign to know you like your intimate friends know you, but it seems you strike me as one of the most spiritual people that I've ever known, because you're constantly kind of preaching preaching in the best way, just like you're kind of sharing, like I have a light in me, like, you know, right. I have a light in me, and like I want to share with people about this light, you know. And I'm constantly amused about when people are like that, because it's all metaphors of this different kind of stuff, you know. And I think it's a kind of a new progressive way to be religious, and it reminds me that religion was just always a way for people to find goodness and happiness,
right,
and sense and comfort out of life, you know.
Yeah, I mean, the example, religion is, I mean, there's spirituality and there's religion.
Sure.
Religion is the bureaucracy that helps people navigate spirituality.
Yeah.
Spirituality is something that, it's funny, like growing up, I didn't have it. And I was looking for, I was always looking for God.
Yeah.
And I couldn't find him. Yeah. And I couldn't figure out what people were talking about. And I realized as I grew older, it's because I was looking at people who were really stuck at the bottom floor of the bureaucracy of spirituality.
Uh-huh.
And that's why I had the negative experience with spirituality, because I was looking at religious people, which is a lot of people have.
Yeah.
I discovered it more recently in life. And when I say more recently, I guess, I mean, I don't know, in the past 5 years. Once you get closer and closer to whatever that universal truth is, the faster it makes sense and the more exponential the feeling is. And funny enough, I can tell you, like, the episode that kicked off my spiritual journey, and I say episode because it started with this show. It was a Halloween episode from a few years ago. And we had a guest on named Bonnie Vent,
mm-hmm.
who was a psychic medium. And we had put that show together specifically just because, like, Chris thought it would be funny to get, like, a psychic medium on the show for Halloween. Or it might have been Ricochet who was on the show at that time. We end up having this show, and I end up having this, like, weird breakdown in the middle of the episode.
Wow.
And I run outside, and my heart is pounding, and I'm, like, near tears, and I can't figure out what it is. And when I was outside, they continue talking, and mind you, this is like a normal crappy awesome episode where we're just like making dick jokes and saying like, our ghost's watching you in the shower, and everybody laughing about that. But I end up having this like, almost what felt like a panic attack, and I step outside, and I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with me? And while I was outside, they ask Bonnie, Chris and Ricochet are asking Bonnie, what do you think happened to Arash? And she said, I think that he accepted a spiritual truth about, you know, something like about the universe that he was not ready to accept until right now. And what led to that, I realized looking back, was we were talking about how things happen for a reason. And we are here exactly where we're supposed to be. And there is destiny. Like, it was this kind of thing. And she was describing how you have entities, you have your past loved ones. And, like, they're not, like, actively involved in your life, but they sometimes nudge you in a certain direction. And I had this experience, and that rest of the night, I felt this, like, euphoric connection. And I remember feeling this, like, deep love for Chris and Ricochet and Hip Hop Eddie, our manager, and just really, like, wow, we've been on this fucking journey. Like, look at what we're doing. And, like, all of a sudden, all these connections and these light bulbs came on. And that was really when it started. And from there, I just kept having other connections and other connections and things happening. And things happening that I look back on and say, like, what are the chances that this is how what led me here and what led to this? Wow. And then DMT.
Wow. But
it started on the show.
You know, that's one thing I find charming about all your guys' art is that it weaves throughout the narrative of your life. Mm-hmm. You know, that, like, you guys are, you're living right here for our display, you know, and, you know, I think a lot of the best podcasts give that sense that of intimacy, that you're part of the club with this cool content creator that you like, you know, and so that definitely shows through that, like, and that's something cool about Platform Collection content for me as a listener, as a fan, is that, like, I never know what's going to happen. Like, I could be listening and then it's like, oh, look, the West Coast Avengers walked in, you know, like, oh, the so-and-so's walked in, or, oh, Thesis walked in, you know, like, or, I mean, that's a really simple way to put it, or what you just described, you know, a personal epiphany.
It's our own little Marvel Cinematic Universe.
It absolutely is, and it's something that I think is really cool about it. This is definitely a subject change. Do you have any ideas for like a full 2-hour movie, or even like an hour and a half movie?
Lots.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like, what are like two or three like ones that you think that you'd like to talk about? You know?
I have a trilogy.
Okay, all right, let's hear about the trilogy before we wrap up.
I think we may have talked. I want to say we talked about it at some point.
Oh, you have? Then you could give me a truncated version.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I mean, I'm not going to get into all the details. So my name comes from it's a mythical Persian hero, who's called Arash the Archer.
Dope.
And the story of Arash the Archer basically is that there was a war between like the Persian Empire and like the Ottoman Turks. I want to say. And There was a border dispute.
Oh, I think I heard the episode where you talk about this.
Yeah.
And it's this whole epic journey that this hero goes on, right?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, and that would be your big...
I have the action scenes, like, choreographed in my head. Dude, I have playlists on Spotify.
That would be soundtracks for it and stuff like
and
that.
And I still listen to them from time to time.
So you totally think in those terms. What about a documentary? What's a documentary? What's a full-length documentary you'd like to make?
You know, Chris had this idea a couple of years ago, and I would love to at some point pull it off, is doing one all designed around the gun, the image of the gun and how it's evolved in hip hop and what it's been connected to social change that's going on in the world around us, the politics of it, and just all of it designed around the gun and moving through like how the gun originally went from like, you know, I'm going to snack you with my lyrical bullets, and it eventually became like a real fucking gun.
Right.
And it became, you know, at some point, kids couldn't tell the difference between when you're rapping about like lyrically a gun or like an actual gun.
Sure.
And how that's connected to what was going on in society at the time. And I think that would be epic.
Oh my God. Or like that almost sounds like it should be a docudrama. Like there's like a movie that goes along.
Yeah, it could be a movie. Yeah, for sure.
That goes along.
You could totally
fucking
do that.
One of the episodes I really loved of the Burner podcast that I was listening to was the one with Athena. And there was something she said that really struck me. She said...
that was a great one.
It was. It was one of the ones you recommended to me because I asked you for a little... I wanted to come up with like a phrase like M&M's, like a little M&M handful.
She's epic.
You gave me an M&M handful of the best episodes, you know, to check out. And she said, "We're sort of pre-programmed to think the man is against us, but to tell you the truth, I think the man is just too understaffed to serve people well." You know, and I just want to say, as a public servant, you know, who worked for the state of California,
she said that,
and I just want to relate to you that like I endorse that perspective.
Yeah,
I think I wanted to relay that back to you because I hear you kind of you're asking those questions a lot. It actually it surprises me somewhat, but it also makes sense to me when you guys tell me that you're not really political, because sometimes it's like you guys are the smartest political analysts I hear. Yeah. And then sometimes you have questions like, well, what do people think about that? I'm like, there's a lot of polling on that, man. You don't know about that. and what was it? And that's definitely one thing I heard you asking questions about. I'm like, oh no, that's true. You know, what was it? I guess I was wondering, that's why I was asking about like how much of society you think counterculture is, because it's like, what are realistic hopes to, man, this is a really big thing question. Please. We really got to wrap it up after this because it is a big question. Like what is a realistic hope for like bringing what's good about or essential about, you know, about counterculture to the wider world? You know, like, because that's kind of what I was getting at with that question, because it's like, it's kind of, we utopian people have a lot of really brilliant ideas about it. And it's like, sometimes I wonder if there's an inherent conflict between being an artistic person and being someone who's like constantly working to shape the world into something better. And it's like, I used to be a actually much more active activist than I am an artist, you know, and then now I'm reverse. Mm-hmm. And like, but it's funny because when you're an artist, because you're such a symbol, because you're such like in front of people on stages, it's like you get more props for it. So it's like, there's people who I think are real activists who are telling me like, oh, thank you so much for coming out and performing. I'm like, you guys fixed a park. Like I came and rapped for 20 minutes. Like why are you thanking me? You know, like how do you think about that kind of thing? You know, like,
well, we are all the best contributors that we can be to humanity by serving our dharma. Like we all fill our roles in the best way possible. There was a time that running for political office was part of my life plan.
Right.
And I had a realization that I could contribute more good to the world with art than I ever could as a public office holder.
Right.
Because I saw that I think artists plant the seeds of ideas in people's heads rather than politicians who react to what the public is demanding. So, you know, like I'm not political in that, like I'm not active in the Democratic Party anymore.
Sure.
But I do see what we're doing as what we're doing in our own way to contribute to the goodness in the world.
Yeah.
And if what we can do to contribute to the goodness is by facilitating this conversation where people like me and you are talking and somebody else is hearing it and it's inspiring them to get out there and do something and to create something, then that's what we need to do.
Yeah.
And, you know, that sense of, you know, I just came to rap for 20 minutes. Like, we need that. Like, right. there's everybody is filling that part of the machine.
Right.
You know, even on that Athena episode that you brought up, yeah. Athena was the one who pointed out, because in like Burning Man community, we talk a lot of like the people who work their asses to build the city talk a lot of shit about the Sparkle Ponies.
Yeah.
Sparkle
I hear ponies, the conversation a lot. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
The Sparkle Ponies are the very, like the Paris Hiltons.
At Rainbow, we call them Drainbows.
Dreambows?
Drainbows.
Drainbows. Yeah. 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 I like that. So like a Paris Hilton is like a Sparkle Pony. Yeah. Like she's not going to lift a finger to help build anything, but she shows up and looks pretty standing on the art car.
Yeah.
And Athena, I realize she's right. Athena's like, no, we need that.
Yeah.
That's a part of the art.
Yeah.
That's a part of, exactly. Yeah. She's like, that's a part of the art. A part of the art is we make this pretty thing because we want pretty things to come land on it. Like, we want pretty little birds to land on it, you know? That's a part of it. Everybody is contributing. Everybody's doing what they're supposed to be doing. This is all a part of it. It's not about, you know, and the more we attempt to not apply a negative or positive association with it, and we see it as simply another part of the machine, another piece of the organism, the more fun life gets and the better life gets and the more we get to move forward.
I think you provide a great service by maintaining a nice window into alternative lifestyles. Mm. I know that when I was young and started to hang out with Sean and getting into hippie stuff, it was like such a relief to me to know that there was more.
Right.
To know that like there's more than just what has been set out for you by like mainstream society.
Right.
That like you actually could just totally drop out and live off the grid if you wanted to. Like you could just travel with these rainbow kids to the next gathering, the next regional they're going to go to.
Right. You said something just a few minutes ago about like how we can implement that into the rest of the world.
Yeah. Or even just like big think, like what is a realistic way to think about that? Because I know that that's something we emotionally get caught on a lot.
Well, look, I can tell you this. This year I camped with Burners Without Borders. Burners Without Borders is the community activation and disaster relief wing of Burning Man. So when when Hurricane hit Houston, it's Houston, right?
Harvey.
Yeah. Where did Harvey hit?
It was. Oh, yes, Houston. Yeah. I believe it was Houston area.
So it hit Houston. It hits Houston, and they were telling us this, like we were on Playa when one of our guys came back and was telling us, the insurance adjusters are usually the first people on the ground in these situations. They're the very first ones because they follow the money. Immediately the money's like, all right, where's the money? We need to figure out who's going to do what payout. So in disasters, the insurance adjusters are the first ones there. They get there, and the first camp that they see that's been set up is Burners Without Borders.
That's insane.
They have shade structures up. They're already like barbecuing their lunch. You know, like all of this is happening, and the insurance adjusters are like, Red Cross isn't here.
Yeah.
Nobody's here yet.
Wow.
CDC, nobody is here yet. Burners Without Borders, fucking hippies from Burning Man, they were the first people on the floor, on the ground.
Wow.
And because we're used to building. Like, we're used to building shit in inhospitable environments. It's not a weird experience. And part of what that came is because we've made it fun. We've given it a positive association.
Yeah.
So the idea of like, hey, let's get our crew together and go out and like help build some shit in an inhospitable environment is not so scary anymore.
Yeah.
It's easier to mobilize and activate.
Wow.
So this year on Playa, they were accepting donations. People from camps were coming and dropping off all their stuff. That they weren't going to take back. They didn't need to take back to default. Default, we call it the normal world.
Yeah.
So they're like, instead of taking it back, we're going to donate all of this to Texas and then to Florida because then that hit. They collected tons of stuff and immediately like got it down to Texas, got it down to Florida. People left Burning Man and went straight to Texas, straight to Florida to start building and had their decom party out in the middle of a fucking hurricane. And they're like, hey, we're gonna have a good time. We're gonna come here and we're gonna do this shit. We're gonna help people. We know how to build and we know how to, you know, enjoy it while we're doing it. And that's where you see that this energy is being put out into the world.
Tangibly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's one of the tenets of Burning Man is civic responsibility.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. I love that. I was looking at those principles and I love how organized and laid out it is. It's like, you know, it's to be analogous of the conversation you and I had years ago about it's okay to label subgenres of hip hop.
Right.
Same thing. Like, it's okay to lay out some guidelines and hippie things. Like, it doesn't make it totally.
Oh, God, we need that so bad. Somebody needs to give us more subgenres in hip hop.
Yeah. Or even just name them more because I think they exist. So we just need the names more.
Right.
I guess I'll wrap it up with, and I'll do this for each of you for sure. sure. Mm-hmm. What is stuff that you always regret not pushing more on the show? Like, you finish the show and the next day you're like, crap, I meant to mention this thing. You know, like, what are two or three that, if you could think of any, that are like, oh, I usually mean to push this more? Or even, like, you usually give a sentence to it, but you wish you could give two or three sentences to it, you know?
I'm so sorry to give a cop-out on this one, but I used to think that way early on. 6 years ago when we started the show, I used to have feelings like, oh, I should have talked about this more. Oh, I should have pushed that more. But
I mean, not even in a, like, just branding capitalist way, but just more like you want to share this more and you don't.
No, that's what I mean.
Oh, okay.
I mean.
Okay, okay, for sure.
I used to keep getting this, like, you know, regrets of like, oh, we didn't finish talking about this subject. Oh, I really wanted to make this.
But now you're zen about it.
No, it's just, well, I learned after, I don't know, 30 episodes, like, hey, we're going to do another 100 of these. Like, let it go, bro. So, like, that's the most important thing. Like, you learn to let it go.
Yeah.
And I can tell you, like, 6 years later, that has led to one of my philosophies. And one of the things that I tell younger artists is perfectionism, you need to let go of that so you can get to fucking creating.
Mm-hmm.
The cure to perfectionism is prolificity. Create a lot of shit.
Yeah.
And you stop obsessing about the missed opportunities.
Yeah.
And we're at episode 300 something on this one.
Right.
I don't even think twice about it anymore when I forget the topic.
That's pretty great. And you told us a lot about what you have upcoming with Burner, with the Burner Podcast Network. Do you have anything new coming out with Platform, or is that stuff you can't talk about?
Platform is going to continue expanding in the direction that it is. You know, we've talked about this, like, Chris is very much the captain of this ship, and he's busts insane hours working on this thing. With Platform Collection, you know, I've definitely seen sort of like where my place is, and like where what we've done is we kind of,
this is juicy. This is what people don't know.
Right. We got this to sort of where it is. And I can tell you with Crappy Awesome, like, Eddie, we're a machine. Eddie books the shows. I don't even know who we're interviewing a lot of times until like the day of.
Sure.
You know, we're just like, we have the address and we're getting there. Same thing. Chris is like working on his art. Eddie's taking care of this stuff. The other shows are going on autopilot. Chris is really brilliant at seeing what's coming up next. So he's watching those kind of things. Platform Collection is working forward. At this exact moment, most of my involvement is with Crappy Awesome. And from time to time, we have like these interactions like, hey, we got to do this thing, we got to do this thing, and we do it.
Right.
But my focus right now, like my active focus is on this project that I have not been able to reveal yet. Yes. Platform Collection is a well-oiled machine at this point.
Yeah.
So it's just like, hey, we need to do this. Cool. Here it is. Done. Like,
right.
You know, we're pretty clean. We're pretty direct. We've been working with each other long enough where like we don't need to keep having meetings about what to do next.
Okay.
So it's just plowing forward. And then a Burner Podcast, I'm sort of in that place. I'm doing what Chris is doing with us here. He's like more like the active leader with Platform Collection, and with Burner Podcast, I'm the active leader with that team, and I'm trying to expand that team. So those are all the projects that we're working on. It's like three different levels of focus.
Right.
And it's great, dude. It's fucking great to be able to just like show up and be the talent over here.
Yeah.
Because like the office work has been taken care of.
Yeah.
I don't need to do that anymore.
So we've talked a little bit about your photography. We've talked a little bit about film. You know what? Even about the film stuff, we talked about more about the content of life that was being represented by the film, but not really so much about the film itself. Is there, are there any specific thoughts that you have about your process when you film things as far as like movies, you know, that is unique about it? Like, why do you need to like actually, you even kind of were saying like it's important to you, the distinction of filmmaker versus photography. Like, why is that?
I don't know if it's important for the distinction. It's just I'm shooting more photography because it's easier.
Right.
But the question is sort of like, I'm sorry, but like filmmaking, your question is, can you clarify for me?
Sure. Well, even just what are you doing with filmmaking lately? Is that part of stuff you can't talk about?
No, I can talk about that. The last video that I did was with Mickey Vale and Candy Cole, known as 50/50.
I saw that.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, Strip was the name of the song, and it was really great. I would love to do more of these videos.
Yeah.
It's just time right now.
Right. Time is like, it makes a lot of sense.
I'm very short on time. And with music videos, they take up a big chunk of time. They're also the way that I do them. I guess they take up a lot of time.
Yeah.
bandwidth is limited. I'm looking forward to doing more music videos in this coming year.
Yeah.
But like on the hierarchy of things that I'm working on, it's like a little bit lower.
I was really struck by the chicken curry video. Like I thought it was such an impressive little movie.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I was like, they probably had to basically film a movie to make that. Is that right?
Yeah. 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 And it didn't get an official release.
What?
It's, yeah, yeah.
It's just on your website.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's official to me, man. It's a pretty legit website.
Cool. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Very cool. So that's photography, the film, podcasting, counterculture. Is there other stuff that we haven't touched that you want to tell the people about?
Yeah, I am community building, I think, is...
You are. That's true. Me.
Yeah.
That's true.
And this next project that I'm working on, which I can't wait to tell you guys
more
about,
of that.
It's going to involve more community building. So
cool, man.
It's going to take all the lessons that I've learned from hip hop, and it's going to take all the lessons I've learned from Burning Man, and all the things that I do, and it's bringing all of them together under the same umbrella. So it should
be. Did I hear that right? Did you say that it's going to bring together some of the hip hop and the Burning Man and everything together?
Everything.
Okay, I
it's an umbrella. I can't wait to share it with you guys, but it's not official.
Maybe I'll be lucky enough.
It's official. Hasn't been released yet.
Maybe I'll be lucky enough to get do a sequel interview once it's out, because
I'm
sure I'll have to pick your brain about it.
Absolutely.
What was it? You are a beloved and positive light in the community, man.
Thank you.
I'm really honored to have been asked to do this with you.
Thank you.
And we're really lucky to have you, man.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Of course.
Appreciate you.
Of course. Thank you.
Thanks, brother.
You may now flush the toilet. platformcollection.com.